We are starting a new series today in what we call Immersed Kingdoms. And so it's a reading through several of the books of the Old Testament, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, and then 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings. And so if you haven't picked up a copy, there are still a few copies out there. And what we do is each week read through, and then that following week I'll preach and kind of look back on the text for the week. There's a reading plan. This is a slightly different format. It's laid out, has the chapters and verses removed, and feels it and can helps you oftentimes read through it a little more quickly and see the big picture of that. And sometimes you get going and you just want to keep going in it. And so today we're going to be looking at the book of Joshua. And so we're not going to be able to do everything that happened in the book, but actually when Teresa read was just from the very end of that book. And so she kind of that summary chapter, the end closing chapter. But I want to highlight a little bit of what happens in Joshua as well as where Joshua fits in the big story before we get into the passage for today. So first, we look at the big story of the Bible. Big story of the Bible, God creates a good world and he puts people into it to rule and to reign in his behalf. And people choose their own way. And then we see this downward spiral. And then God chooses and selects a family. And through this family, he's going to rescue and restore the world, the family of Abraham, and then Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he works through these people, but these people, his own people, end up in slavery in Egypt. And then God rescues them out of slavery in Egypt and brings them through the desert under the leadership of a man named Moses to this land of promise. And that's where the book of Joshua picks up, as these people who have been promised for centuries a land to live in are now coming into this land. And so as you read through the book of Joshua, it's not an easy book to read. I mean, you get going in the first part of it. After a while, you're like, oh, so much killing and so much bloodshed. And it's a tough book to read. And there are a lot of questions revolving around that. And we're not going to get into all of those. And if you ever want to have a discussion about them, we can talk about, like, what do we do with this, what seems like a genocide, with these killing of entire cities and towns and men, women, and children. And there's a lot of complicated ways. And I think in some of the books I looked, there were like 8 different ways to try and understand and explain what was going on. And so we're not going to do those today. But you read through the book and you notice this, and then those first 8 or 9 chapters, and there's all this killing, and then all of a sudden it slows to a drag as it gets into a geography lesson. And it starts talking about the tribes of Israel and how they're all divided up, and this tribe gets this region, and this tribe gets this region, and all these different cities, and you're like, oh my goodness, and it just drags to a halt. But as we see this whole story leading into this final chapters, one of the things that we notice is that God is working through the people, that all that's going on is a gift from God. That the people, when they win these victories, so for example, one of the best known stories from the book of Joshua, if we think about it, is the Battle of Jericho. And this story where Joshua and his people come into the land and there's this fortress city of Jericho, and God gives them a battle plan. And the battle plan is this strange thing where they march around the city once, and then they march around it again, and then after the 7th day, then they march around, and they just blow trumpets and shout, and the walls fall down. Well, that didn't have anything to do with the power of Israel or their army. It was all the power of God. And in the midst of that, there's this other great scene where Joshua goes out, and he's getting ready for the battle, and he sees this shining figure, this angelic figure with, you know, dressed in armor with a sword, and Joshua says, was like, well, whose side are you on, ours or theirs? And I love the answer that the character is like, well, neither. And it's this good reminder that for the people, the question isn't, is are God on their side, but are they on God's side? Who are they choosing for? And this is where it comes to this end of the book. And so the end of Joshua, the last couple chapters are a transition point. So most of the conquest has been done, and they're looking at what's happening, and they're asking this question after this invasion and all this war and this conflict that has gone on, whose side are they going to choose? What are they going to do? And so chapter 23 starts this way. The years passed, and the Lord had given the people of Israel rest from all their enemies. Joshua, who was now very old. So here's Joshua getting ready to speak to the leaders. The land's coming into rest, and now they have a decision to make. They're settled in this land and what's going to happen. And so he begins to lay out what's happening to them and what they're supposed to do. And they're supposed to follow the rules that Moses had given them. And he lays out what the consequences will be if they don't. And he says, if you break the covenant of the Lord, your God by worshiping and serving other gods, his anger will burn against you and you will quickly vanish from the good land he has given you. So remind you, like, God has given them this land, but they still have a task to do. And so the focus up until now has been the land and the distribution, and now there's a choice set before them. Are they going to serve Yahweh, that is the God of Israel, or are they going to serve other gods? And so he begins with this reminder, sort of a history lesson. And he starts with, once a reminder, he says, Joshua said to the people, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your ancestors, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the Euphrates River, and they worshiped other gods. So it starts off with a reminder, like, your people used to worship and serve other gods. And then it goes on, and it turns quickly from that to what God did for them. And it's sort of this comparison. I kind of like to think of it this way. Is he's setting it up, and he's saying, okay, you have a choice. You can serve Yahweh, or you can serve the other gods. And then he kind of goes on, he says, let me tell you a little bit about what Yahweh has done. And you heard some of that as Teresa was reading there. He's like, he goes on and he says, oh, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, did. He says he brought terrible plagues on Egypt and he set you free. And then he drowned the people of Egypt in the Red Sea. Then he brought you into the land of the Amorites. And they fought against you, but I destroyed them before you. When you crossed the Jordan River, the men of Jericho fought against you. And I sent terror ahead of you. And it's this story again and again. It's like, here's what God did. You were in the desert. He fed you with manna. You were in the desert. You were thirsty. He brought water out of the rock. You came into this land. You didn't have to fight because God did the fighting for you. Now, do you want Yahweh or do you want these other gods? And he's setting up. He's saying, here's what Yahweh has done for you. Here's what the God of Israel has done for you. Here's what the Lord has done for you. And what's interesting is he's helping them remember this story. He's saying, will they remember? Will this history of God's acts form their identity? Will what God has done shape who they are? And what's interesting as you read through that part of the story is he focuses on all that God has done, but he skips over a whole bunch of the story because if you were to go back and read the story, there were a whole bunch of times where God's people didn't trust. But he leaves that out of the story. He doesn't talk about their missteps. He wants them to remember, here's all that God has done for you. Shows that if God had not intervened, they would have been done for. What he wants them to do is to see this land they're living in is a gift. That where they have come is a gift from God. That God is a God of grace and they had no part. And that's what we celebrate even still today as we look back on Easter, that the gift of Jesus is a gift to us. That it's grace coming to us. And so here, even in this story, he's saying, all that's happened to you, you had no part in it. And even makes it clear, he says in 24:13, he says, I gave you land you had not worked on, and I gave you towns you did not build, the towns where you are now living. And so he's setting them up. Which one will you choose? I gave you vineyards and olive groves for foods, though you did not plant them. He's reminding them, here's this gift. Now remember, here's all that Yahweh did for you. He brought you out of Egypt. He conquered them. He fed you in the desert. He gave you water. He brought you into this land. He made the conquest. Do you want Yahweh or do you want these other gods? Notice, we don't hear anything about what the other gods did because they did nothing. So then we come to the big line in chapter 24. And this is a very familiar passage in Joshua. And because of its familiarity, we can miss how high the stakes are. We see it on bumper stickers. We have it, you know, little refrigerator magnets. And so it miss what it is. It says, fear the Lord and serve him wholeheartedly. Put away forever the idols your ancestors worshipped when they lived beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt. Serve the Lord alone. But if you refuse to serve the Lord, then choose today whom you will serve. Would you prefer the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates? Or will it be the gods of the Amorites in whose land you now live? But as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. And that's the line we're familiar with. Like, oh, yeah, we'll serve the Lord. But here is what he's getting at. This is a consequential decision. Which one will you choose? There's still a choice set before them. Will you choose this God who has done everything for you? Or will you go back to those other gods? Will you continue to serve those and what they do? And so it's this call to revere and to serve, to live as loyal servants, to put away those old gods. And so we think, well, we're not standing in the promised land 3,000 years ago. No, but we still have the same choice set before us. We still have that same kind of choice set before us. What some people might refer to as the come to Jesus moment, right? Of saying, here's this moment you have to choose. Are you going to serve God or are you going to serve something else? And this is what it's about. It's like, and we have to choose because the focus of what we choose grounds our living. There's no middle ground. There's either Yahweh or the other gods. You can't just say, well, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And too often what happens is we don't necessarily make a choice. We just don't choose, which ends up, in some sense, making the choice for us. We kind of drift into something. We do it without intention. And so we think about all the different things. There are a lot of things that shape our choices. They're shaped by the families we grew up in, our commitments, our traditions, and all these things shape our identity and our choices. But here the call is to have our identity centered on this God of grace and liberating love. For this is us, we understand this as Jesus. So we have to ask ourselves, will God's acts be the basis of our identity going forward? For us, will the crucifixion, the resurrection, the ascension of Jesus be the basis of our identity? And so while Joshua can recount the story of all that God had done, we can recount an even greater story, an even bigger story, where not only did God rescue the people way back then out of slavery in Egypt, but he rescued us from slavery to sin. He overcame the power of death. He overcame the power of sin. He overcame the power of the devil. He conquered death and offers us new life. And we look back on those things and say, will that shape our identity? Will we remember those things? And will that be the basis of how we move forward? And so when we choose, will we serve Jesus or will we serve another God? And so what do those words of Joshua mean for us today? To serve the Lord, mean him. So serving can mean to worship, to show loyalty. And so there's kind of two parts to that that Joshua describes. The first is putting away the other gods. We have to put away those other gods. And Jesus makes this very point in one of his, in Matthew chapter 6, where Jesus says this. He says, no one can serve two masters. That's where he's getting at the point. You can't serve God and something else, for you will hate the one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. And here he makes the specific point, you cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. Or in some translations, mammon, so this power. And so our gods today, they might not have names like the Old Testament gods of Baal and Molech, but the temptation is still the same. And the temptation of the other gods is to put our hope, our trust and security in something other than God. And when I talk about putting our trust in something, I'm talking about an unhealthy trust. I mean, there's a normal, healthy trust we put in things. For example, we put some trust in banks, right? We put our money in banks and we trust that when we go to the bank, the money's going to be there for us to take out. And so there's an inherent level. Most of us don't go into a bank and evaluate, say, can I see your books, please? And do an audit on them before we decide whether to deposit. The same way when we drive down the road every day, we have a certain amount of trust in a lot of things. We trust that the engineers who built the bridge knew what they were doing. Now we may worry sometimes about some of the bridges that we drive across, whether they're going to still be standing, but the truth is we have a certain amount of trust. We trust the engineers who designed the car that we drive in. When we go into a grocery store, for the most part, we trust when we buy something, we trust that it's been packaged properly and taken care of and that it's going to be. And so that's a certain level of trust. And that's not the kind of trust I'm talking about. But there's an unhealthy kind of trust that we can put in things. We give it too much authority. And sometimes what this looks like is maybe we follow the advice of someone or something, maybe our tribe, instead of considering what God has to say. So let's consider even this one that Jesus mentioned specifically. Mammon or wealth or materialism or greed. And so what's a way that greed or money has shaped and become a god? And so one way is if we look back in history. And we look back at the history, particularly, you know, not only in this country, but many countries around the world of race-based chattel slavery. And so we think of what this looks like. What was the foundation for slavery? It was greed. It ultimately came down to greed because different countries wanted cheap labor. They wanted to make money. They wanted to do this. And so the easiest way to do that, what's one of the big costs in producing anything? Your labor costs. Well, if you steal people and enslave them, your labor costs go away and you can make more money. But what happened is then, think, well, wait a minute. How can we just enslave other people? And so they had to come up with a justification for it. So, well, look, their skin color is different. They must be inferior. And so a whole system was developed to make a set of people inferior, all based on greed. And so there was this idolatry, and all of a sudden, instead of looking at what the Word of God said about the nature of people and all people being created in the image of God, they let the God of money drive what they were doing. It doesn't look much different today. It may not look like race-based chattel slavery, but in how many ways are companies or corporations or individuals shaped more in their principles by money and the bottom line than by what God calls us to? Or even as individuals, does materialism shape our identity? Do we begin to believe that the things we have, how much we have, fills my needs? Or do we say, does my desire to accumulate affect relationships? If I just have a little bit more money, if I work a few more extra hours, and all of a sudden it begins to shape our relationship with our family, with our friends, and with our church even. And so we're asked to serve. You know, who will you serve? Will you serve the Lord or will you serve money? And so it's this choice that we have to make, and there's no middle ground. And so we're asking ourselves, what is God calling us to? What does it look like to serve God, and what does it look like to serve money? Or maybe it's not the God of money, it's the God of me. And I don't mean just me. Me, Pastor Carl. I mean, me, yourself, the person you see when you look in the mirror. That it can be tempting to make yourself the center of the world. That you're always preoccupied with your own needs, that you require excessive attention and admiration. And you're looking around, you're saying, oh, I live for me and all that I need. And so what we can do is, you know, we could go on and we could list, and there are many other gods. Is one of the things I would encourage you to do is take an inventory. Or better yet, one of the best ways to do it is spend some time in conversation with God. Say, God, what are the things in my life that are drawing me away from you? Are there things in my life that I'm serving rather than serving you? Because the truth is, we're not always good at being honest with ourselves. We can look and say, well, that's not a problem for me. Sometimes we can ask other people, say, oh, you know what? Do I have a problem with money? Do I have a problem with narcissism? Do I have a problem with fill in the blank? And sometimes people will help you out with that. Some people are more honest with you than others. But the person who will always be honest with you is God. And you can't fool God. And so you can go to God and you can say, God, what are those things that are holding me back? What are the other gods that I'm serving that I need to set aside? And God will help you to see those things. And so the call is to renounce those other gods and serve Jesus. And so we don't look back on the conquest on the land, but on the cross. And we make markers. We help each other in this. And so this is what, even as it goes on, if you were to read the rest of the chapter, it kind of goes on. And there's a story where Joshua says, oh, you know, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And the people says, oh, we would never abandon the Lord. And Joshua's like, are you sure about that? And it kind of goes back and forth. And part of what he's getting at is we need each other to do this. And so this is one of my reminders to us always is in any of these parts of our following Jesus, any of our life with Jesus, we need each other. It's not a solo adventure. We need God most of all in his spirit, but we also need each other. We can make those markers. We can help each other. We can look back. And one of the things they do is they build a stone monument. They say, they look back and they say, this is a reminder of what God has done. And we do that in church sometimes. We look back and we say, here's a sample, here's an example of God's faithfulness. Here's the way that God has done things for us. Sometimes we put banners up and we have people's names. We have different things. We remember baptisms. We remember all those things. We say, these are reminders of the good things that God has done for us. These are the reminders of why we can serve God. These are the reminders of why we can trust God. We sang that hymn near the beginning of the service. What great is thy faithfulness, O God. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. And so one of the things we do sometimes with each other is we just tell each other stories. In some traditions, we call them testimony or witness. Sometimes it's someone standing up on a Sunday morning sharing that story. Other times it's just a small group or you're having coffee with someone. And they say, here's this thing that happened in my life. I went through this surgery and I'm much better than I expected. I was going through this hard time in my life and God helped me mend this relationship. Those are testimonies of the goodness and the faithfulness of God. And the value of those testimonies and of telling those and hearing those is when it comes time to choose which God to serve, we know which God is faithful. Because these other gods, the gods of money, the gods of narcissism, the gods of nationalism or racism, all these other gods will always fail us. But God will not. But sometimes we need the reminder. And so we tell the stories. We encourage one another. And so not only do we set aside the other gods, but the call that Joshua speaks to in verse 14, it says, fear the Lord and serve him wholeheartedly or with all faithfulness. In other words, our service to God isn't measured in feelings, but in faithful actions. So what does it look like to serve God? One is to do what he taught and commanded. You know, if we're going to serve the Lord, if we're going to serve Jesus, we do that by doing what he taught and what he commanded. We love our neighbors. We bless those who persecute us. We give generously. We reach out to the poor. We speak the truth in love. All these things that are calls of Jesus. And we can read those all through the Gospels, these Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, these stories of Jesus, as well as the letters of Paul and John and James. And we read these stories and we say, this is who God has called us to be. So the call when Joshua says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, it's a call saying, I'm going to do what God has called me to do. I'm going to do the things that God has called me to do. And for us, we're going to live the life that Jesus has called us to live. We're going to live like Jesus lived. So it's not only the specific words he spoke, it's the things he did. As we watched him, as he reached out to those around him, as he had conversations with people, as he cared for the least and the lost. And so we see that, we say, this is what it looks like to serve the Lord, because we have that question, well, to serve the Lord, does that mean showing up in church? Does that mean volunteering? That may be a part of it, but it's much bigger than that. It's all of our lives and all the things we do. It's not only what we do on a Sunday morning. It's not only what we do when we're being watched. It's what we're doing when we're not being watched. As I use that phrase often in the confession, it's the things we do and the things we leave undone. The things we say, the things we leave unsaid. It's our thought life. It's all these things. Serving the Lord is everything we have. And trying to put that under the phrases, the Lordship of Christ, to say, Jesus is my King. And if he's my King, I'm going to do what he's called me to do in all of my life, not just part of my life. We don't get to cordon off part of our life and say, well, I'm going to serve Jesus with this part of my life, but not this part. Remember that thing? You can not serve two masters, just one or the other. And so if we're to serve the Lord, it means with everything. Is that easy? No. Do we miss the mark sometimes? Yep. And that's where the grace of God comes in, to realize, like, we have to ask forgiveness. We need his help to do this. It's not something that happens only on our own. And that's kind of the reminder of it, is we remember that the only way we do this is by God's grace, is with his help. And in some sense, that's the story of the book of Joshua, isn't it? When they came into this land, these refugees who've been in the desert for 40 years, how were they able to conquer this land? How were they able to settle in it? Because God went before them and God did the fighting for them. And so in some sense, if we want to deal with it, if we're going to fight against whatever those other gods are, if we're going to serve them, we need God's help to do it. And so we ask God, God, I need your help. It's to say, God, I know what you've done in Jesus Christ. In Jesus, you have given me life. You have given me hope. You have given me peace. And I want to serve you, but it's hard. God, I've given you this, but I struggle to love my neighbor. God, I struggle to tell the truth. God, I struggle with lust. I struggle with the desire for power. God, these things are all tearing me up inside. I want to serve you, but I can't. Ask him, and he will give you the grace and the strength to do that. And so what I would invite us to do, Fruitland, is this morning, as we stand on the brink of tomorrow, if you will, of the next day, that we too have a choice to make. Will we serve God? Will we serve the Jesus who lived and died and rose for us? Or will we serve other gods? Will we serve the one who's given us life and peace and hope? Or will we serve gods who bring us death and despair? And so can we declare today, each of us as individuals, that as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Amen.